Here we are. We're on the final day and a half of our fun drive. And tomorrow we're wrapping it up with the super cool Friday fun drive finale. And what we need to happen now in order to do this, in order for this to happen tomorrow, we're going to be asking for your support all tomorrow evening right up to midnight with our local DJ host live in studio spinning tunes for you, which is a phenomenal thing for the final 5 hours of the day. But if we're able to make our goal before they get here, they're still going to go on live and it becomes like a celebration and we'll have a lot of fun. 845-482-4141. What I'm trying to say now is please give now at 845-482-4141. Go to WJFFradio.org. And because to do this, to make this happen, to raise these funds, we need to be getting the donations that we've been waiting for this whole fund drive. They really need to come in now in the next day and a half. So that means we need to have the donations keep coming in. The good news is they've been coming in. We got a tremendous amount of support during All Things Considered. It's not bad news, but the challenge now before us is to keep that momentum going. Even as we get into the evening, we're getting into local news with the local edition. It's a big news day. This is an important program. We hope that you support it. Please give what you can. 845-482-4141. Go to WJFFradio.org. Then, of course, we have the daily, and then it's Ramble Tamble. We're going to be asking for your support through all of these programs. So don't wait. Support us now. We have folks here to take your call, and we're always ready to take your donation at WJFFradio.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cook breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Bolton. More information at GreatWesternCatskills.com.
Live as live can be from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. I want to thank you so much for being here with me this evening. Tonight we've got a lot of local news to get to, and for that we turn to, once again, Philip Pantuso from the Times Union and Times Union Hudson Valley Bureau. Philip, welcome back to the local edition.
Good to be with you.
So we got some big news to get to. Would you mind starting with the Sullivan Correctional news? Because we've been talking about that in the headlines today.
Yeah, so you know, earlier this year, as part of the state budget process, the state committed to closing a handful of correctional facilities in New York, and we learned what two of them would be today, and one of them is in the Sullivan Correctional Facility. You know, we've got confirmation from the State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision, but when we reached out to them for further details, they referred us to Hochul's press office, which did not get back to us by the end of the day today. So there's not a whole lot that we actually know about this right now. I think that they're saying that that this could happen, you know, by November. And it follows a review of 44 facilities statewide that, you know, were slated as possibilities for closure.
Yeah, well, leading up to this, you know, I think in some of the reporting from our news partners over at New York Focus, we're looking at what was surprising to me, how underpopulated many of New York State's prisons are right now. So this seems to follow from those basic numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, so Sullivan has at the moment 426 incarcerated individuals out of a capacity of 560. The other one that was announced today, Great Meadow, which is up in Washington County, has 480 incarcerated individuals, but it can hold almost 1,600. That one is barely a quarter full. Sullivan is a little more full. But still, the state decided it was one that they could do without, I guess.
And I assume they'll be moving these incarcerated folks to other facilities that are, you know, underpopulated.
Yes, yes. You know, overall, the state's prison population has been declining for several years due to a number of factors, mostly having to do with criminal justice reform and a little bit more leniency on low-level crimes and how people would be, or whether really people would be incarcerated for them. You know, that has led to closures in the past. I think in our coverage area before this one, the most high-profile closure was Downstate Correctional Facility in Dutchess County a couple of years ago. There's also Fishkill, which is now being slated for a big redevelopment project, which is one of the potential outcomes of the closure of these prisons. You could turn them into big mixed-use development, housing, you know, things that may serve certainly more of the U.S. population.
Now, for us here in Sullivan County, I mean, the big part of this story, the first thing I think of is employment. The two major industries in Sullivan County perennially are tourism and agriculture. But not too far after that, I don't know what the actual rankings are, but just anecdotally, you meet a lot of people who work in corrections or nursing. Those, to me, I would say are like the next biggest employers in the area. I know there's a lot of people that work at these facilities. I know that we don't know much now, but what do we know about the impact that this will have on local employment?
Yeah, so DOCCS says that no layoffs are anticipated. They're going to offer staff at the two prisons positions at other state facilities or other state agencies. You know, that gambit only works so long as you close more prisons. There are more people that need jobs and fewer places within the department to send them. So we'll see if they're actually able to commit to that. I presume that, you know, their commitment to moving folks who work at Sullivan to other state agencies, not necessarily DOCCS agencies, is doing a lot of work in that sentence. So, you know, we'll see. Certainly it's going to be disruptive in rural counties. That may mean, you know, moving to a state agency that's got an office that's a further commute, that otherwise kind of disrupts what routine you might have been in. So, you know, even though they're saying there is not going to be any layoffs as a result of this, certainly I think it's safe to say that it's going to be disruptive at a minimum.
Yeah, and it also sounds like you're saying that we need to look into the details here. This is what they're saying up front, but how this actually plays out, there's a lot to be determined there.
Yeah, I mean, committing to moving into other DOCCS facilities or state agencies is so big as to be almost meaningless.
Right. We got some other big news in Sullivan County, but I was wondering if first we could revisit a story that we've been following pretty regularly the last couple of years, which is Central Hudson. You know, Central Hudson's, you know, had some troubles as a power provider, and they've been negotiating with regulators. What's the latest from Central Hudson?
Yeah, so this was big news this afternoon, at least the Hudson Valley folks. So Central Hudson has been seeking a rate increase. Basically, they need permission from the Public Service Commission to raise the rates on customers for delivering electric and natural gas to their homes. And they say they need this in order to increase their revenues, to address infrastructure declines, to better weatherproof in the event of severe storms like we had, you know, earlier this week. I lost power yesterday. And in order to better kind of modernize their equipment or in order to try to meet anyway the state's climate goals. They were seeking increases that would have amounted essentially to an uptick of about $30 per month on an average customer's electric bill and $30 per month on an average customer's natural gas bill. And this was met with quite a lot of pushback from not only climate activists, but consumer advocacy groups and a lot of elected officials, because as you mentioned, Central Hudson has kind of not really put a foot right in a few years. They, you know, had a pretty disastrous 2021 rollout of a new billing system that wildly overinflated some people's bills, missed some bills. It was a huge mess that started two different investigations that have found fault with Central Hudson. It led to the ouster of their president and CEO and the appointment of a new one. And late in the legislative session, a kind of long shot takeover bid, or a long shot bill to have a public takeover of Central Hudson, to basically make it a public utility company as opposed to a private one. Right now, it's a subsidiary of this Canadian company. So, in this rate increase case, a group called the Public Utility Law Project filed a lawsuit to try to stop it. So that kind of kickstarted this whole process that included hearings before the Public Service Commission, and there were, I think, 8 different public comment periods where Public Service Commission members were able to hear from affected customers of Central Hudson. Almost none of them had good things to say. They finally came down with a ruling today, or technically it's called an order, where they did permit Central Hudson to increase its rates, but at a lower level than what the utility company was seeking. So this gets a little bit in the weeds, but I'll try to make it simple. Basically, I mentioned earlier, Central Hudson was seeking to raise rates that would have been about an average of $30 each on a monthly electric and a monthly gas bill. What the Public Service Commission ended up approving will end up meaning that an average electric bill will rise about $12 or $13 a month, and an average gas bill will rise about $12 a month. So about 25 total as opposed to 60. But how they're getting there is a little bit complicated. It's like technically they approved a higher rate increase, but then what they did was they took some of the settlement that was reached with Central Hudson last month, where they, among other things, had to commit to paying back about $62 million and set up a customer service fund to kind of shave off what they technically approved. So why I think this matters is that they've technically set a higher increase than what customers are going to feel, which means that when this renewal expires after a year, which is only good for a year, Central Hudson can actually kind of go back and ask for another increase from a higher starting place than what it's going to feel like to consumers over the next 12 months. So it's kind of a mixed bag. Most of the elected officials, Assembly members Sarahana Shrestha, Jonathan Jacobson, State Senator James Skoufis, also County Executive Jim Metzger, basically all the people who have been lambasting Central Hudson for years now, mostly decried this as well. They didn't want to see a rate increase at all, given the billing issues that Central Hudson is still not quite ironed out. They've committed to big changes. They're not going to do estimated meter readings anymore, but all of those changes have just recently gone into place, and we don't really know what the effect is yet. So, like, Central Hudson really has not earned back the goodwill of its customers or politicians, and so they feel like they shouldn't be allowed to raise the rates at all. But nevertheless, if you have Central Hudson, your bill is going to go up the official rate is something like 8% for electricity and 9% for gas. And again, that's going to average out to about $25 overall on the combined bill. That goes into effect pretty much on your next bill and will be in effect until the end of June next year.
You know, you mentioned those billing issues. I just want to remind folks, just to kind of circle back to the beginning, that it was just last month, basically, I think, that Central Hudson had to agree to pay nearly $65 million fine. And I'm wondering, to what extent, if any, is this rate increase them passing some of the cost of this fine on to consumers? Or is there a legitimate, objectively, can you say whether there's a legitimate increase that doesn't have anything to do with that $65 million fine?
Well, they were seeking the increase before that fine was levied, and the fine is it's not like Central Hudson is forking over $65 million to the Public Service Commission. Most of that is that shareholders are going to have to absorb the cost that has been spent to fix the broken billing system, which amounts to something like $35 million over the last 2.5 years. And they are also not going to challenge let me do this math real quick. I think it's about $16 or $17 million in what they say are missing funds, basically, from revenue adjustments from bills that were messed up. So basically, like if they messed up a bill and then fixed it, and they say, hey, actually, we billed you for $150, but you owe us $300, you know, give us the extra $150, they don't get to actually pursue that anymore. There's only $4 million of that $65 million quote-unquote fine that goes directly into customers' pockets, and the Public Service Commission applied that to its order today. And so what they did basically is like, part of this fine is also accounting for all these costs, right? They said, Central Hudson, you can raise your rates this percentage to meet this revenue, but then we're going to slash some of that revenue right off the top based on what you already have to absorb as a result of this settlement last month. And we're going to plug that $4 million that's going into customers' pockets directly into this as well. So that's $4 million less that you can't charge or seek from customers. Does that make sense? It's really confusing.
It does sound complicated, but I think I have a better general understanding than before I heard this report. But I wouldn't want to have to take a pop quiz on it, is what I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The upshot basically is like, yeah, your bill is going to go up. It's only going to be for a year. Central Hudson said that they were happy with this process, but of course this is much less than they were seeking, and they're framing this as kind of necessary revenue that they need in order to modernize as a company. So, you know, they will definitely be back next year trying to raise the rates again, and they'll get to do so starting technically from a higher place than what is going to show up on your bill over the next 12 months.
Phil, we still have more news that we need to get to. Do you mind holding on while we take a quick break here?
Not at all.
Okay, great. That's what we're going to do. We're going to pause for just a moment here, and we'll be right back with more news, including this story about a fatal police shooting in Rock Hill. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
So you've never donated to this station before. That's okay. Today is a great day to make your first gift. Here's how.
Give now to Radio Catskill at WJFFradio.org.
It's WJFFradio.org, WJFFradio.org, or call us here. We have folks ready to take your call, 845-482-4141. Make your donation now, 845-482-4141, or go online at WJFFradio.org, just like listener Susan did. Thank you so much to Susan being our latest contributor. This is what we need to do to make our goals. We need to keep these donations coming in all through the day. And we've got a special incentive for people to donate during Ramble Tamble that I think maybe I will give you a quick preview of right here. We'll roll this out now if you are interested in this. We will help you out here. One moment, just bringing this up here to make sure that I get it right. Well, okay, you know what? Well, we got a surprise for you for the Ramble Tamble. We'll get into that, but please call now, 845-482-4141 to make your donation of any amount. Help us out during the fun drive. This is The Local Edition.
Support comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting Daryl Hall plus Elvis Costello and the Impostors with Charlie Sexton, July 20th. Ticket information at BethelWoodsCenter.org. New this year, camping and glamping on the historic site of the 1969 Woodstock Festival.
And welcome back to the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. We're on live with Philip Pantuso of the Times Union. And Philip, this is a big story from just a couple days ago. What can you tell me about this fatal shooting in Rock Hill?
Yeah, a really big story. So early on Tuesday morning, I think it began about 2:20 a.m. or shortly after 2 a.m. actually is when the whole incident began. Ulster County Sheriff's deputies tried to pull over a man for a suspended vehicle registration. We don't know exactly where this was in Ulster County yet. The Ulster County Sheriff's Office is so far not really answering questions about this. But when the deputies tried to pull this man over, he fled the scene. And they pursued him until he drove across into Sullivan County, where state troopers picked him up near the village of Wurzburgo. And they pursued him for a while. And at one point, the man tried to turn his car around when he reached Rock Hill, at the intersection of Rock Hill Drive and Emerald Place. A trooper then got out of his patrol vehicle, yelled for the man to stop his car. He kept driving and he hit the trooper, who then fired his service weapon, striking the driver. That man died. I think he technically died at the hospital. He was transported to Garnett Medical Center. And the roads were closed for several hours as there were still lots of law enforcement on the scene when the sun came up on Tuesday morning. And that's pretty much all we know right now. The driver, his name was Albert Melendez. He was a 32-year-old. You know, we don't know that much about him at this point. You know, it seems this is obviously a tragic way for anyone's life to end, but certainly when the inciting incident was just a suspended vehicle registration. So, you know, we're trying to find out more about what else might have gone on there. Like all shootings, or like any shooting where a police officer kills a civilian, In New York State, the Attorney General's office is investigating this, and they will do one of two things. They will either decide to pursue charges against the officer if they feel like he acted unlawfully. And this officer's name, I should note, he was hit. He's doing okay. I think he was actually released the same day. His name is Russell Peters. The other option, if they do not pursue charges, is they have to issue their full investigative report, essentially outlining why, you know, they felt like criminal charges were not relevant in this case. So that's kind of what we know right now. You know, this is still, I guess I would call it a developing story, because there's still a lot of initial information we don't yet know, and that's certainly more things will be revealed as the AG's office continues its investigation.
Typically
with these kinds of things, like, there have been, unfortunately, a couple of other shootings in involving state troopers or local police in the Hudson Valley and Catskills in the last couple of years. In none of those cases were charges pursued. But, you know, separately, there was the Trooper Christopher Baldner incident where he used his vehicle to ram another vehicle off the road. Charges were pursued in that case. But with these shootings, it's typically been about not like, you know, 6 to 9 months or so for them to come forward. Sometimes it's a little shorter. Sometimes it takes a little longer. So it may be several months until we have kind of a full understanding of what happened here, but I expect by the time we talk next week, we'll hopefully know a little bit more about, you know, what went down on Tuesday and a little bit more about this man who was shot and killed, Albert Melendez.
Right. And then even more answers might come out later in the report. So Well, yeah. thanks for being on this and telling us what we do know so far. And yeah, we definitely a bit more questions than answers right now, but you'll be on it. So finally tonight, and this is not something that I was aware about, but there was an event that Governor Hochul did. Was this in conjunction with the Times Union?
Yeah, so this, I thought this might be interesting to talk about just because she mentioned a couple of things that are of interest. You know, she talked a little bit about congestion pricing, which I think is of interest to Hudson Valley and Catskills folks, for sure. And she talked a lot about Biden, which is, you know, of interest to just about everybody right now, particularly as, you know, we're speaking. There's been new reporting this afternoon and this evening suggesting that he may actually be reconsidering whether or not to stay in the presidential race. But this was an event that happened today. It was hosted by the Times Union, one of our Capitol reporters, Dan Clark. It was actually at the Hearst Center in Manhattan. But it was like an hour-long interview where she answered a wide range of questions. And she said that, you know, she's long positioned herself as a pretty ardent supporter of Biden's administration. And she's stuck by his candidacy, even as other high-profile Democrats, even including in New York, have explicitly or sort of behind the scenes suggested that Biden should, you know, make a decision soon, if not outright exit the race. She kind of doubled down on that today, but she did say, of course, if things change, then things change, and she'll, you know, support whoever the Democratic nominee is. And then she was also asked about congestion pricing. This comes as, you know, New York City Comptroller Brad Lander, who has been a vocal critic of the decision to pause congestion pricing, has recently suggested he may be exploring a lawsuit to try to override the what's technically being termed as an indefinite pause on that. Hochul said that her decision was at least in part to address growing anxiety among middle-class workers commuting into Manhattan and the businesses that employed them. She continued to cite economic uncertainty in the interview today, including inflation and a desire to bring workers back into Manhattan offices. But she denied what I think has been pretty widely reported, which is that this was a fairly last-minute call. And I'm not really sure how she squares that with the fact that she was touting it, you know, in the weeks before it was set to go into effect, and then with, you know, there's very little indication. I think there was one story, you know, maybe the morning of the day that she eventually put this pause on, that she was considering this. But nevertheless, she says that it's something that she had been weighing for a while, and she is now looking at options to adjust the congestion pricing protocol, maybe including more carve-outs for certain districts within the congestion zone, and implementing a version of it with a lower toll fee. It's unclear, you know, if changes are made to the plan, it's unclear if it would have to go through the incredibly lengthy and arduous approvals process that the first plan went through, or if it can just be these tacked on as modifications. But
yeah, especially, you know, as the MTA is you know, in kind of in the lurch for its funding. Philip, believe it or not, we've gone through the whole program here. We got to say goodbye now, but I want to thank you so much for going over all this news with us on a big news day. And I'll remind all the listeners that these stories are up now at timesunion.com. And we'll be talking to you again next week. Philip Pantusa from Times Union. Thank you.
Take care.
Well, that's it for the local edition. Thank you so much for being here. I've been your host, Jason Dole. We'll be back tomorrow evening. We'll be doing it again on our super cool fun drive finale, super cool Friday fun drive finale tomorrow. Don't wait till Friday. Help us end this fun drive now. Give what you can. 845-482-4141. That's 845-482-4141. Call now to make your donation. Go to wjffradio.org. Hey, I want to say a big thank you to somebody I was supposed to thank right at the beginning of the show, but I will thank them then. It's Sheldon from Narrowsburg. Thank you so much to Sheldon in Narrowsburg for making a generous donation earlier in the afternoon. And I hope you got to hear us say your name, Sheldon. Thank you again. Hey, the Daily's up next. And after that, it's Ramble Tamble. Stay with us. This is